KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Citizens Climate Lobby, along with the Park City and Sunrise Rotary Clubs, hosting a presentation on climate change. This is coming up Monday, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. In the studio with details, I have Judd Warner and Katie Bernhardt, both with Citizens Climate Lobby. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So as I mentioned, Monday evening, 6:30 to 8 at the Jim Santee. The title of this is Failure is Not an Option, Two Decades That Must Change the World. Judd, what's going to happen?
Well, do you mean what's going to happen to the world or what's going to happen Monday night?
Let's start with Monday night first and then with the world.
Yeah. So Monday night, we're going to hear a presentation from Dr. Robert Davies. Dr. Davies is an associate with the Utah Climate Center and an adjunct professor at Utah State University, and he specializes in outreach related to climate change. He's a physicist by educational training. And so Rob will give us a presentation that lasts about 45 minutes long. It'll cover the fundamentals of climate science, what's happening both on local and global levels, what the manifestations and the forecasts are. And then that presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. The whole event should last about an hour and a half.
All right, his message, encouraging or not so much?
Well, it's a combination of both, and that really is the message is related to climate change. It's encouraging that we're now in a position where we have the technology to make strong progress in the clean energy transformation, but it comes down to us. It comes down to our individual behaviors and the policies that we put in place to govern our energy usage. So really his message is going to be the news is bad, but it's not impossible. We can do it if we develop and apply the will.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the technology, but Katie, as you know, as a younger woman here, I mean, what's your outlook? I mean, are you encouraged by this new technology to change the course?
I mean, I'm certainly not encouraged by what's actually happening with climate change. It's scary. And my generation has a lot of weight on our shoulders, and we've got a lot of work to do. But I really do think, you know, with technology, with implementing policies, I mean, the main agenda of Citizens Climate Lobby is to implement a proposed carbon fee and dividend carbon tax that hopefully will, put a price on carbon so that it discourages corporations and, you know, major industries from carbon production. And I think these kinds of policies are incredibly important moving forward so that we not only have people at the grassroots level that are prepared and willing to step up in the face of climate change, but so that we also have a policy infrastructure and on more on the treetops level than the grassroots level.
Yeah, given the results of election 2016 with a president-elect who really is not convinced of climate change, are we in trouble? I mean, to even think that something like this policy could be adopted?
Yeah, we could be. I think it's too early to tell. I think I think for some of us, and it's a sorry thing to say, but I think some of us are waiting to see whether he's really gonna put policies into play to back up that belief, or he was just saying what he thought he needed to say to get elected. Okay, and the other thing, Leslie, is I haven't completely lost faith by any means, because I can see all the momentum, both at the local levels and in hundreds and thousands of municipalities and communities around the world, and then on the global level. This thing has a lot of momentum, and I really and truly believe that Mr. Trump's ability to derail the 2-degree objective is limited. You know?
Did you want to add to that?
Yeah. Well, I also think if you really look at the facts of the economics of climate change, the short-term versus long-term economic interests, it really is in business interests and economic interests to act on climate change now so that we still have the resources to conduct economic activities in the future. So if we're able to, you know, get in there and convince some of these people that are now leading our country that it really is in economic interests to act on climate change, I think we can do it.
Yeah. When we talk about 2 decades that must change the world, are we talking about between now and 2036?
We are. And one of the pieces of information that Rob's going to share in the presentation is that we have a carbon budget that scientists, if you look at that 2-degree scenario and the world's objective to not allow the global average temperatures to exceed the historical mean by more than 2 degrees, you can associate a fixed amount of carbon in the atmosphere that corresponds to that temperature rise. And so, and we call that the carbon budget. And what Rob is going to show in his presentation, at the current level of emissions worldwide, we bust the budget in about 2035, 2036. Oh, okay. So, yes, it is a crisis.
And as you mentioned, I mean, here with grassroots efforts, Park City Municipal committed to a 100% renewable electricity or energy policy by 2032. I mean, so yeah, we're doing it, but there's the rest of the world. I mean, does it really matter what Park City's doing?
I think it matters. I mean, I think it matters. It's, yes, maybe some might call it a drop in the bucket, but just being able to say someone is doing this, someone finds this important enough, an entire town finds this important enough to act on it, I think that statement alone is important in its own right.
Yeah, and I would second that. You know, there's an extraordinary amount of value in our town providing the examples for others across the U.S. Actually, an encouraging fact, Leslie, is the U.S. isn't necessarily leading this clean energy transformation. I mean, there is a perception among the general public that or the concern, well, why should we do this when China and India may not necessarily fall in line? Well, the truth of the matter is China and India are leading. You know, China made tens of billions of dollars worth of investments in solar technology, and that really resulted in the precipitous drop of the cost of solar voltaics worldwide. Katie also mentioned the economic impacts and benefits. You know, this clean energy transformation, how we produce, deliver, use, and save energy, is going to be the equivalent of transformation over the next few decades as the internet was over the last two. And to be honest about it, if the U.S. tries to extract ourselves from that, we'll just lose. You know?
So when we talk about technology, I mean, we've got solar panels, we've got big, huge solar farms being built. What else is out there, though?
Well, I think there's a lot. There's battery storage, for one. Okay. I'll give you an example. I read something here not too long ago where the bus company, and this is a U.S. company, Proterra, is about to start selling an electric bus that they say has a 300-mile range. You know, about a month or so ago, I went to the governor's the Utah Air and Energy Symposium and listened to a person from a company by the name of BYD, a Chinese company. He mentioned that their company had just secured the largest order yet in the United States for electric buses. That was 35 buses from some municipality that I've forgotten about. And then he went on to say that they already have 4,000 of these buses in service in the city of Tianjin, China. So,
yeah. Anything you wanted to add in terms of the technology?
I mean, I think wind is incredibly important. Wind and hydro. And I think hydro is important not only in the U.S., but globally. I mean, it's really making waves in the energy industry. But also, there are some new technologies coming forward that I find particularly interesting. I spent my college years working in an integrated food and energy systems lab at Dartmouth. And we actually were focusing in part on how microalgae can be used to produce energy. And I think that not only, I mean, you have to take the entire life cycle into consideration when you're looking at different energy systems. And I mean, solar is great and battery storage is great. But if you look at the actual production of batteries, throughout the production of batteries, you've got all of these super harmful chemicals like battery acids and that kind of thing that are also endangering the environment. So if you look at the production of microalgae, it's actually an incredibly ecologically friendly system throughout its entire life cycle. And so that's the kind of energy system that I think is incredibly important and that we're really looking forward to in the future.
All right. So if people would like to become more involved, I mean, with the Citizens Climate Lobby, do you have regular meetings? Do you have, or do you just host presentations like this? Or
we do. We have a chapter in Park City that we established last year. We call it the Park City and Wine Net. Is whether or not we put a price on carbon.
Well, Olympians, architects, and Silly Sunday supporters attended last night's city council meeting in the studio with a recap. Council member Andy Bierman. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the site concept design for the Public Works Utilities facility. We heard from Public Utilities Director Clint McAfee talking about how employees wanted a home or a design to thrive. He said that would help employees to be happier. Basically saying if we take care of our employees, the happier they'll be and the more productive. So can you just talk a little bit about the project? There's a public space and a private space involved here?
Yeah, this is a new facility we're looking to build out on 248 out towards Quinns Junction. As you're driving towards the recreation complex, it'd be on your left before Gilmore Way. And the purpose of this is to service water, our north storm drain utility, and streets. We currently have that housed mostly out of Iron Horse, and we've outgrown our space. We need more space for equipment. We need space for employees. And the part you brought up is a philosophy called Design to Thrive, I believe the architectural company calls it. And essentially with the city facilities, we look at doing lead design in certain cases. But this is a little more holistic and comprehensive approach where it's looking at a highly energy efficient, maybe even a net zero facility, but also one that's a quality environment to work in. And so they're trying to strike that balance.
Yeah. So doesn't it have to be a net zero under your guidelines?
We have not formally adopted that as a policy, but I've been pushing for council to have that discussion, and I think we will shortly. Certainly to meet our goals, we're going to have to build net zero facilities.
So how big of a facility are we talking about?
It's going to be large. It's a 14-acre space in all. Not all of that is going to be built on. It's going to be tucked back a fair bit from the road. It's going to include a reservoir for short-term water storage. And there are, I can't say offhand, but I think 4 to 6 buildings plus a large storage yard to put big machinery in.
All right. So, again, we've got the municipal side, and then we're also talking about some commercial and housing space?
No, not in here. The housing discussion was when there was talk about over top of some of our storage and parking, should we put in a few studio units for employee housing? Certainly, council wants to walk the talk. We're looking at every little nook and cranny right now to put housing in. So we're discussing, is this an appropriate location? I think there's some debate on council whether it is or isn't because it's so isolated and it's kind of an industrial feeling area. But we are going to have a look at some design options and talk to our staff and see if there's interest if we were to put some studios in there where city employees might be able to live in those.
Oh, my guess is that people would be eager to be. I mean, we're talking about, you said near like the dog park. Is that where this is happening?
Yeah, it would be. It's a little bit isolated in that it'll be its own unique turn, but it would be very close to Round Valley, the rec center, hospital. It would be a bus ride or a car ride into town. And certainly we are busting at the seams in terms of providing housing, particularly for our transit employees. So, again, we felt this was an appropriate time to look at it.
Well, from my notes, it sounded that you were not a big fan of it.
My issue with it is I don't like the idea of building housing outside of the core of town. I think if we can, for these sort of units, it's best if we can get them in town where people don't need to get in a vehicle to get to their essential services. And so my preference would be that we take more of the Iron Horse facility out here in terms of offices or storages, and we build the housing directly in the center of town. So I asked whether council was interested in looking at that, and there was support for it.
Community Development Director Ann Laurent approached council saying that Transit Director Blake Fonsbeck already had a need for 20 units for transit employees, and we should expect further growth because of the park and ride and the expanded transit. She was mentioning 8,000 people commute into Park City from outside. I mean, is that the market that we should be targeting for affordable housing, or is it the people who are already living here who need something affordable?
I think a mixture of both. A lot of the people that are already living here are established in town. They either own homes or they've figured out a rental situation. And certainly we would like to allow more of our workforce to be able to live in town, but we also do want to create a housing ladder for those that live here and maybe want to move up from rentals into ownership.
Yeah. So what's the timeline on this project?
That's a great question. I can't say precisely, but I think you're going to see accelerated discussions over the next several months and likely breaking ground within the next, I would say, probably year. There's going to be a fairly extensive, it's a big project, so there will be a big public process behind it.
All right. The Park City Tennis Center, I think it was we call it the Candy Erickson?
Yeah.
Center, received the 2016 Outstanding Facility Award from the United States Tennis Association. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, we're really proud of them. This is something we have an outstanding staff, a great facility. A big shout out was given to Candy last night, who before she passed was tremendously involved in advocating for the expansion and improvement to the Mark and the Tennis Center. And it has been well received, and we feel honored to get this national award.
All right. Silly Sunday's been around for 11 years. They just ended a 3-year contract with the city. The council only renewing 1 year. How come?
Yeah. Well, ideally, they would have liked a 3- or 5-year renewal. We recently created, in the last year, the city council has created the SEAC, which is a Special Events Advisory Committee formed of stakeholders and citizens at large to discuss event fatigue. Something we're hearing a lot in our community, that we have too many events, too frequent, the impacts have grown, and how can we mitigate those? So we're looking at all of our events, reevaluating how we mitigate these, how we schedule them. And so Silly Market wanted some reassurances, so we thought the best way to address that would be give them a 1-year extension, allow SEAC to have some more time to talk to them about potential mitigations of their festival, since it is 14 Sundays in the summertime, and it just buys us all a little more time to go a little deeper into this issue before we commit to a long-term contract.
Yeah, as you may recall, years ago, Silly Sunday threatened to move off Main Street. Is it maybe time to let them?
I don't think they really want to move, and I don't think we really want them to move. It's a great event. It's well-liked in the community. Again, because of the cumulative factor of all our events, we are trying to figure out how we can rein those in. That may or may not have any impacts on Silly. But right now, council's very committed to them. We unanimously supported the 1-year extension. We feel like we have a great working relationship, and we'll keep building on that.
All right. Mike Sweeney, a business owner at Lower Main Street, a big fan of Silly Sunday, and says that he and his tenants have enjoyed the growth and encouraged council to consider another multi-year contract. Would the business owners at the top of Main Street feel the same way?
I think it's very mixed. There are a lot of strong opinions on Main Street in terms of whether Silly is negative or positive for businesses, and it really depends on your business plan, your location, and since day one, it's been a mixed opinion on the street.
Now, you as the TMI owner, though, have that business. That's probably good for your business, right? Something for your guests to do?
Yeah, generally events are good for my business. As a resident, I see the impacts. A town is very, very busy. Getting up Park Avenue can be a snarl on Sundays. As a business owner, the more events, the better, generally.
Yeah. Also, Ted Ligety's business Shred moving to Park City, or trying to. I think he'd hoped to receive a grant from Park City.
Yeah, he did. We approved that grant. It's called Anomaly Action Sports, is Ted's company. That's the parent company for his helmet and goggle brand, as well as some protective gear. We're excited to have him moving his business here. It's a decent sized business. It does about $4 million annually. He's going to be creating about 7 quality jobs, and it fits in well with our economic plan. We don't have a big game economic development plan here. We're not out trying to attract large businesses. We're pretty focused on snow sports and outdoor industry type opportunities, as well as high altitude training. So this falls solidly in that category, and it should bring some good jobs to town. He's hoping to double that to about 15 jobs in the next 5 years. So we gave him a little bit of help for his relocation and build out in that new space.
Yeah, how much did you give him?
It's going to be $20,000 a year, roughly. We've agreed to 3 years, but we're going to have an annual check-in on that.
All right, and where is he moving?
It's going to be over on Iron Horse Drive. So right in the center of town.
Okay.
And we were pleased. He had a lot of environmental initiatives in there and commitment to a bike commuting program for his employees. And it's nice to see a native son, someone like Ted, want to move back to this community and contribute and stay involved. So we were happy to help.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else from the agenda that you wanted to mention before we turn to some other issues?
I think that's it out of the agenda.
All right. Well, you and Mayor Jack Thomas met with Rocky Mountain Power, mm-hmm. mentioning, and you mentioned that they are looking to do some kind of a demonstration for net zero somewhere. I think it was you who suggested mm-hmm. perhaps Park City Affordable Housing Project to do this pilot program. Any particular project you're thinking about?
Not really. And this is still really a broad idea. As part of we had a long discussion with them, and something that got mentioned at the end of it is they had looked at doing a pilot project somewhere trying to build I think it was 180 unit net zero community that they could try how all the renewable on-site energy would affect the grid around it. That's one of the integration challenges. So I had just mentioned to them that we would be very happy to serve as a model and maybe could dedicate one of our larger affordable housing projects to that. We got a couple that we're looking at right now in terms of Lower Park. I'm not sure if that's going to be enough units. We are looking at purchasing property in Bonanza Park that we could maybe integrate it into a housing project. And we have some other parcels around town that we're looking at larger projects. So it's I don't know. I don't know if anything will come out of it, but we saw an opportunity there, so we just mentioned interest.
Yeah. In terms of that, what would a net zero pilot project look like? I mean, solar panels on the roof, geothermal heating, electric car? I mean, what is it?
Yeah, we didn't have time to go into any depth with them. I think solar would be a large part of it. Working on some battery storage is something that'll be critical because you need to figure out how to handle those nighttime hours where the solar isn't working.
Yeah. Oh, one issue I did want to follow up on, though, with the agenda, you did have that monthly affordable housing update. Was there any news from that?
The only thing that I think was good to hear is we are moving along on the 1450, 1460 Park Avenue project. That was the one that was formerly called Green Park. We've got 8 units that are being built there. Right now the historic homes are lifted and there are new foundations being put in. And we expect that to come online to the middle to the end of next summer. So we're excited to have that finally moving.
Yeah, there was also a quick brief discussion with regard to the senior center. Apparently some confusion about what was discussed at the last meeting with regards to the senior program. What's the confusion there?
I think generally council's in the same place. We went back and forth a bunch on this a couple of weeks ago, and we couldn't remember exactly where we ended up. But what we did agree to is we're going to move the senior center. We feel like that's critical to being able to maximize the housing in there. It is likely to be going into the rec center building over at the city park, which we'll be building out. That's that big brown kind of nondescript building behind the basketball and volleyball courts. That's going to be redone, and we have the potential to add a space for the seniors in there as well as a space for our rec programs and potentially some child care. So we're leaning towards that. There was some discussion that we may want to look at the MARC expansion as a place to put the seniors, and we couldn't remember where we ended that discussion. So we're going to go back through the minutes.
Yeah. Is there still, because that does sound like a great spot, the MARC, but there was some concern about maybe just not enough room given the expected expansion?
Yeah, there are recreational needs as well there. So we're just trying to balance out the best place for it and the best place for the seniors. And I think that's going to require some further conversations with them as well.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah, I got to, if I can have a minute. First of all, I want to mention it's Veterans Day today, and we should all go thank those that serve our country for all they've done for us. And I also want to take a minute and talk about our recent elections. These comments are really on behalf of the mayor and all of the council. We wanted to thank the community for coming out so strongly in these elections. We had nearly 80% participation either through day of or mail-in voting, which is just outstanding. And the whole process was orderly and handled with dignity. So that was great. It was nice to see the community pass both of our transportation initiatives as well as our open space bond. And those passed by huge margins, over 70%, which is almost unheard of for tax initiatives like that. And for me, it's encouraging because I think it says that that your local government is in sync with community needs and that we're all pushing in the right directions and have the same priorities. So I'm happy about the affirmation. I did want to talk a little bit. There's some anxiety over the recent elections. There are certainly some people that are concerned about the national elections. And I want to remind people that the government that affects you most is local. And Park City will continue to represent our residents' values and stand up for what's important to this community. And lastly, I wanted to talk to one group that we've heard a really high anxiety level from, which is our local immigrants in town. And we want to remind them that Park City is and will remain a welcoming and inclusive community. And it's a place where that they are safe and they are welcome here. And we want to be a complete community, and that includes them.
All right. Well, you opened the door, so I'm walking in. In terms of running for re-election, or are you going to consider another mayor run?
I didn't expect that question today. I haven't taken it off the table yet, Leslie. I'm going to wait and see our current mayor, see what he decides to do and see where I am in life. And I think I've got a couple of months to decide whether I want to go down that road. But I haven't ruled it out.
Yeah. And you had also, you and your wife had put up the TMI for sale.
Yeah.
Any news with that? And would that change your mind about whether or not you stay in town?
Well, it would free up some space in my life. Certainly two jobs is a lot to handle right now between the business and that. But no new news on the hotel. We're talking to a number of interested parties. The question I most frequently get is, where are you going after you sell that? I'm not going anywhere. I just got reelected to council. I have 3 years left in this. I love this community. I have a home on Park Avenue, which I'm getting ready to remodel. So we are firmly going to stay involved in this community. So if we sell our business, we're just going to find other ways to be involved.
All right. Andy, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Park City Council member Andy. KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, adoptive native elder Navajo rug show opening tonight, running through Sunday at Deer Valley Snow Park Lodge. In the studio with details, I have CJ Robb. Good morning, CJ.
Good morning.
So the show opens tonight. It's a little bit more expensive to get in to have first pick. Tell me a little bit about what happens tonight.
Our gala event opens at 6 p.m. tonight. Admission is $30, but does include 10% off of any rug purchases. There's hors d'oeuvres passed by Deer Valley staff. We also have our live auction tonight, which is the only part of the show that benefits our program. All of the weavers take home 100% of the proceeds from the sales of their rugs. So tonight's really the fun opening event. And then the weekend, we have a lot of cultural events to attract families. And it's much more affordable admission. It's $5 at the door Saturday and Sunday, or a donation of canned food to go home with the weavers.
All right. The live action, can you highlight maybe some of the items there?
You know, we have a couple of trips this year. There's a trip for two, including travel and all the expenses down the Grand Canyon for 8 days. So that's a fantastic package. I'm struggling. We have two amazing rugs this year that are really incredible. One's a hand-spun vegetal dye rug that is absolutely amazing. I've never seen anything like it. And another one of the rugs that we're auctioning off this year was done by one of our weavers at the show. And her mother's been in the program for decades. And she wove a rug and sent it in for the auction saying that the program has done so much for her people. She wanted to weave something that would benefit the program so that the program could continue distributing food and firewood. And so that's amazing.
Yeah. So you can just show up and buy tickets tonight, or do you need to get tickets in advance?
You can show up at the door. Our office isn't staffed. Everybody's at the lodge right now. So at this point, the only way to get tickets is at the door. It moves pretty quick. We have a fantastic group of volunteers working the entrance.
Okay. And then again, Saturday and Sunday, the hours are 10 to 6. As you mentioned, $5 or canned food. Tell us about some of the cultural events, because that's a big part of this rug show.
It's
every year.
Huge part of the rug show. So Saturday morning, it actually starts off. We have a group of children, native dancers, coming up from the Mount Nebo School District, and they're going to perform some traditional dances in the morning. We're following that up with our Shiaji Ambassador Pageant, which we do every year, and that's a way to get local, urban, native youth involved in the program, involved with the grandmas. And so it's a very traditional Navajo pageant. The grandmothers at the show love it. The girls that are participating have to introduce themselves in Navajo, demonstrate some traditional skills, and then the winner represents the program at native local powwows all over the region for the next year. So that's a lot of fun. We have a weaving demonstration in the afternoon where the weavers will demonstrate weaving, demonstrate the preparing of the wool, and talk about the stories behind their rugs, which is amazing also. And then our last event on Saturday is Grandma Native American Idol, which is a singing competition among the grandmothers at the show who our director, Linda Myers, gives them a topic to sing about. They come up with a song, and they get up and they sing songs in Navajo, and they love it, which is a lot of fun. Sunday starts off with a veteran ceremony in the morning. The Native American people have an incredibly high rate of service in the armed forces, and a lot of the grandmothers at the show have lost children to wars. And so Veterans Day is a big deal to all of them. So they do a ceremony that honors any veterans that come to the show, and they also make prayers for the veterans, for the family members of veterans, and for their own loved ones that they lost. It's a very spiritual event. We have a weaving demonstration Sunday afternoon, and then Sunday closes with a powwow. Harry James, who's a local Navajo guy who's done powwows for decades, puts on the powwow, brings in dancers from all across the nation, and they do. It's a fantastic way to close the show. There's a local drum group that comes in, so there's fantastic music to go along with the dancing. And then that's right before, I think that starts at 3 o'clock, and then the show closes at 6.
All right. Just in terms of just the number of elders who are still weaving rugs, I mean, are we seeing those numbers dwindle?
It is starting to. The show's really important to the weaving families because we bring in all generations of weavers. We have 40 weaving families in attendance at the show where the grandmothers are in the program, a lot of them in their 80s and 90s now. Some of them have been coming to the show for, this will be the 27th year. But their family members, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, who they've passed the weaving on to, also come to the show. So they demonstrate the weaving along with the grandmothers. A lot of them have rugs in the show. So in total at the show, we have 80 weavers represented and about 400 or 500 rugs this year.
Wow. So it's not, we haven't lost the art, the craft yet.
We haven't lost the art. I think dwindling was a good word, but it's not gone.
Okay. Again, people just show up between when you're open, either tonight at 6 o'clock or tomorrow or Sunday, 10 to 6.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good luck, CJ. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
It's 8:51. The National Ability Center will be honoring U.S. active duty and veteran service members with its annual Saluting Our Heroes lunch this coming Wednesday. The keynote speaker will be the New York Times bestselling author, documentary filmmaker, and news correspondent Sebastian Younger. He joins me now on the phone, along with Gail Loveland. She's National Ability Center Executive Director. She joins me now in studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hi there.
So, Gail, let's just start with you. Why does the National Ability Center do this?
Well, today's a very important day, and I want to start off by thanking all of those individuals that have served our country and their families for their work. And so, as many of our local community knows, the National Ability Center started as a veterans program. Our first grant was from the Disabled American Veterans, and we served 15 veterans on the slopes of Park City Mountain Resort, 15 Vietnam veterans. And today we're up to over 900 annually. And with that growth, we really wanted to recognize and help raise awareness in our community for the work that we're doing at the National Ability Center. This year, this program is going to be incredible. It happens on Wednesday the 16th down in the Grand American Salt Lake from 12 to 1:30. And what it will feature is a great program that we're doing with the National Center for Veteran Studies at the University of Utah. They are working with us with a lot of veterans with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and we're seeing unprecedented results by providing therapy in a non-clinical setting. The National Ability Center doesn't do the therapy. That's what the National Center for Veteran Studies does, but we provide a healing environment and recreational programs that help make that a success. So that's what we're going to be talking about with our programs at that event, and it ties so nicely in with what Sebastian we'll speak about as well.
All right, I'll get to him in just a minute. But you had mentioned, so you have 900 of your patrons now or injured veterans?
Yeah, it's about 30% of who we serve annually. And as we continue to grow, that's where we think it'll probably end up being. But, you know, the National Ability Center, as we started to see this growth, we had a lot of good conversations with our board and our team. And our commitment is to be there for our veterans for their lifetime. And we know after these recent conflicts, there are a lot of complications our veterans are seeing, and they're going to be living with them for a long, long time. My father, I'll honor him. He was a Vietnam veteran. He's got some health issues right now. We're all committed to being there for those veterans and their families.
Tickets still available, and how much?
They are. It's not a ticket event, so our goal is to really build a community awareness. We do ask for a donation at the event, and they are available, but we would recommend, one, that you come, and two, that you let us know soon. So we're expecting probably 700 to 750 people. We started this event 5 years ago. The first event had 50 people. So we know we have a great way to honor our veterans and our service members, and everyone wants to join in. If you can't make it, we are certainly going to be sharing our story more. And obviously for those that are local, come learn about it and come to the NAC and get involved.
All right. Well, Sebastian, let's turn to you. For those who may need some background, your film Restrepo, which documents a platoon fighting in Afghanistan with your co-director, Tim Hetherington, won the Grand Jury Prize back in Sundance 2011. And then after Tim's death, you went on to make a film about Tim, Which Way is the Front Line from Here? That premiered, I believe, in 2013 at Sundance. You've also written several books. The latest is Tribe, which is about why tribal sentiment is such a rare and precious thing in modern society, and how the lack of it has affected us all. So you've got a lot to talk about. On Wednesday, what are you going to be focusing on?
Well, I think I'm going to explain the concepts behind my book, Tribe. You know, really, tribe is a somewhat loaded word, which is why I called the book that, but also it comes with some baggage, and I'd like to talk people through that. You know, the book is really about the effect of community. We evolved as a species in very close-knit communities of 30, 40, 50 individuals in a dangerous and harsh world. And when people feel deeply connected to others, particularly in a threatening environment, they feel safe, they feel meaningful, they feel like their life has purpose. That's sort of what we're wired for by evolution. So, of course, if you put soldiers in that context in combat, they're in some ways re-experiencing our evolutionary past as a species. And then you pick them up and bring them back to modern society, they really struggle because modern society is not a communal society. As wealth goes up in a society, the suicide rate tends to go up, the depression rate tends to go up. Psychologically, modernity, modern life, is extremely hard on people. It has benefits as well, of course. So I just want to talk people through that. You know, particularly the book does not focus on veterans or on soldiers, but it uses that experience of coming home from a communal existence, coming home to this country as a lens through which to see this country. Peace Corps volunteers, likewise, really struggle with depression when they come back, and of course they weren't in combat. The transition to modern society is, frankly, traumatic itself, and my book really talks about why that might be.
Well, as keynote speaker next Wednesday, I mean, this is certainly a benefit for our veterans for attending this event, for you attending this event. Any other ways you're helping to make a difference in their lives?
I'd like to think in large and small ways. I mean, I have very close friends who are vets, and, you know, one in particular, Brendan O'Byrne, was the focus of my book, War, and I'm actually about to see him in about half an hour. You know, I've been very, very closely involved with his life. But, you know, more broadly, I mean, the conversation about veterans and the trials, tribulations of coming home and why that's so painful. I mean, I think I'm a journalist, right? So the thing I can best offer society is an explanation of itself, a non-political, neutral, profound analysis of what's great about us and what is difficult about us as a society. And, so, you know, from the very personal to that big picture, you know, I hope I'm doing some good, but I guess we'll find out.
For sure. And I want to just say that I think Sebastian is being modest, and he and his team are donating his services to come and be our speaker. It's incredible for us to be able to build awareness, like I said, for the innovative and new programs that we're able to do at the National Ability Center. So thank you so much.
Yeah, it's an honor to be out there, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah. And Sebastian, I mean, after Tuesday's election, a lot of people now more fearful that there will be more wars. I mean, and I don't want you to give advice, but maybe just some words of wisdom to our president-elect, given what you know and have seen.
Well, you know, I'm aware, as I'm sure everyone is, that there's a huge gap between campaign rhetoric and core personal belief and subsequent action. And, I, you know, I think Donald Trump as a I mean, he's a lot of things, but among other things, he's a, and I didn't vote for him, but he's an incredible performer, and he really did know what to say to get elected. It works. I mean, there's no disputing that. And but I actually think that the, I mean, too, I know many conservatives who are a little alarmed by him, and I know plenty of liberals who are alarmed by him, obviously. But I actually think, in terms of his past political beliefs for almost his entire life, and his, I think his sort of personality at the moment, I think he did what he had to do to get elected. I think his actual actions in office are going to be really, really different. And I frankly don't think he's going to be particular. I may be wrong, but I don't think he's going to be particularly belligerent. I think, if anything, his ethos is that America does not need the world. I think he's wrong, but the America does not need the world. We don't have to sort out the world's problems. We can pull back from NATO. We can pull back from our military bases, and we're fine on our own. I think that's actually incorrect. But I, if anything, I think he will be pulling people out of those war zones more than the opposite.
All right. I need to leave it there. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your contribution to the National Ability Center. Gail, again, people just need to let you know by how.
Yep, they can go to our website, discovernac.org. And we just want to thank our sponsors, Zions and Eccles and many, many others. We're featuring Edwards Life Sciences for their great support to veterans. And we hope you all join us. But if you can't, like I said, just come to the NAC. Please get involved.
Okay. Gail and Sebastian, thank you.